Greetings to you, my family in Christ, sisters and brothers, saints and sinners, children of God. I am approaching 48 years old, and of course, it is not old by many measures, as many members of my beloved St. Francis family will remind me when I complain about the toils that age is bringing to me. But it does seem like kind of a milestone in my life. Now, way back in 1989, over half my life ago, I tested positive for HIV, which pretty much eliminated the question of my passing my DNA on to later generations, as well as other things that I was no longer looking forward to, for fear of passing on the virus as well. And so anytime I thought about the desire to have children, I pretty much moved away from that thought and on to other things in my life. But now in 2014, I'm still around and in better health than ever. And my virus has been undetectable for at least the last 5 years, maybe more. But I'm going on 48 soon, and my spouse is going to be, and he's going to be mad at me for telling you this. My spouse is turning 60 next March. And, so the prospect of bringing a newborn child into this world now is also the prospect of approaching 70 when that child is in the midst of college. And so it will be a time that I hope to be beginning retirement and at least joining my husband's golden years in his life. So while the possibility exists that I might produce a healthy child, and my maturity level and my career path are such that I could provide that child with a happy life and home, I have to ask myself, why now? And I can only come up with egotistical reasons. I want someone to point to me and say that I am their father. I want someone to look up their family tree and carry on the Bas de Chien family name. I want to rubber stamp my legacy in the world, imprinting my personality, wisdom, and values on someone who will look back to me with some bits and pieces of my face, my mannerisms, maybe even the words that I use. So when I look at the rationale behind my own desire to reproduce, to have children, my vanity, my ego, my own sense of needing someone outside myself to complete me, it seems prudent of me to not seek to create a new life from myself. And to be honest with you all, as far as my genetic heritage goes, my family is not suffering. We have enough DNA to pass on to the next generation. There have been children, and there still are children in my life. In fact, my family is a very good representation of the evolutionary theory that supports same-sex attraction as a trait which was developed in the human family over the last millennia. Because I have 4 siblings, each of whom have children, for a total of 8 nieces and nephews. And having no children of my own to support and no issue of my own to pass on my legacy, their lives are probably a little bit better off for having me as their gay uncle. So while there have been no children in my household within my life, whether or not I was the one to father them, there have been no children in my life. And many of us who live in what popular culture likes to call non-traditional families will also agree that one doesn't have to produce their own children in order to have children in their life. But even though I was raised in a fairly supportive family, I did have my own struggles in my teenage years. And evolution, while it's a science, real life does not always match up to scientific expectations. Queer people don't always get born into large families that love them and support them and don't depend on them reproducing and carrying on the next generation. Queer people are often born into families that abuse them, injure them, and reject them. Now, in San Francisco alone, some 40% of people under the age of 18 living on the streets are queer youth. Now, estimates for numbers of queer youth may vary, but they range from from 400 children on the streets to over 2,000. And this population is particularly vulnerable in terms of exploitation, drug use, and endangerment by violence from adults, some of whom might be the law enforcement officers that are supposed to be protecting them. They're subject to the elements, violence, and not infrequent ridicule from the rapidly changing demographic of this city, particularly new arrivals. Now, in Matthew 25, Christ has some words to say about clothing him when he is naked, visiting him when he is imprisoned, and feeding him when he is hungry. Truly, I tell you, just as you did to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. Now, queer youth are among the most marginalized population of the homeless and represent a significant portion of the population who are on the streets. Because of the difficulties that queer youth are more likely to have in their home situations, they are more likely than other youth to run away from home. Because of the difficulties they encounter on the streets, there are further obstacles that they have to deal with there. Employment, housing, and legal difficulties are just a few of the barriers that our society provides to prevent homeless queer youth from advancing further in their lives. Now, in a way, they are the least of Christ's family when he's speaking of the least of me, and have needs that require greater attention. They're among the most likely to fall through the cracks of not being served by, and therefore become even more deserving of Christian love. But they're so easy to ignore and easy to forget because they're often hidden away from us. Those of us who have made something in our lives, despite the difficulties that we have had along the way, might not easily view the person sitting on the sidewalk, whoever they may be, in an abundance of secondhand clothes, immediately as a child in need. Because what we are so willing to see there is just another member of the homeless population, of which there are so many. Now, I know that I can walk down any street in San Francisco or Oakland, and knowing that I have somewhere to be and something to do, I will easily close myself off to the people on the side. Now, I know that they're there. I'm aware that they're there. I'm constantly aware that they're there, but I don't pay active attention to them. And it's a combination of my inability to help each and every one of them, because that's one of the reasons why I don't always give out money or my number or whatever, because I can't help all of them. And a desire to get to my destination without a challenge or distraction, it gives me kind of an immunity so that I can pretend that they are not there. And so I don't get to see their faces. I don't get to ask them the questions that I need to ask them to find out what they need or hear their voices. And I don't get to know where the children are among them. I don't think at those moments that all of them, even the ones that aren't children, were once children. Like all of us were once children. I was hardly the model of innocence as a child. I got mad at my mom or dad, I don't remember which one, when I was 9 years old, and I took the Metro Rail from Silver Spring to the Washington, D.C. airport. I was running away. And I just hung around the airport because I didn't know what to do when I got there. I shoplifted a book on ferries. And I was waiting for some soul to walk up to me and see the child in need, you know, someone needs to help me. But nobody saw me. And then finally I got aboard the Metro Rail again and found my way back home by the end of the day. And as an adolescent, I hung around other children who lived in our apartments, getting into trouble, fights, and drinking when given the opportunity. I gave my single mother more than a few gray hairs for the stuff that she actually found out that I did. I don't want her to think that there was other things that she doesn't know about, because she'll probably be listening to this sermon later on. I was hitchhiking by the time I was 16 years old, and I met some very interesting grown-ups, including one fellow in his late 20s who I saw again and again after that. Now, I'm sure I missed a lot of opportunities to do worse, and I'm thankful that my mother was as tolerant as she was, because I think if I was living under an iron fist, I would be out of there. But she turned her head a lot. She didn't see a lot, and so I was able to live under her roof and manage somehow to make it to the end of high school. I could have been one of those runaways. Because while later on in my life I found out that my family was in fact much more loving and accepting than I had given them credit for, as an adolescent who was becoming more and more aware of his sexuality, I felt more and more isolated as a child. And I failed to find appropriate role models for myself. Instead, discovering older people who wanted nothing for me, only from me. And while I've all long since dealt with the feelings of exploitation I experienced as a teenager and as a young adult, that youth still lives inside of me somewhere. Those feelings are still inside of me somewhere. And I still want to react to some of the memories and experiences as I once did. Even in South Carolina, in high school in the early 1980s, I knew where San Francisco was. I knew what went on in San Francisco. There were movies, made-for-TV movies, not always the best ones. Some pretty good misrepresentations of what gay people were like back then on television, but it was who I was. I could have just as well been one of the children on the streets of San Francisco. And all of us have been children once in our lives. The disciples were children once in their lives. So why are they sternly reprimanding the people who are bringing children to Jesus? What is it that they've forgotten about their own lives? Now, it's certain that children during the time of Jesus were considered fundamentally incomplete human beings. They were valued less than a full adult and were viewed negatively because of their limited maturity. They were people, but in formation, not quite full people. But children also, in those days, had an inherent value to any family. They were also the future. They were indispensable to the state of economic, cultural, and military purposes, and necessary to the economic survival and well-being of any family. Nevertheless, children were objects to be taught, molded, and held in stock for the future, not fully human or capable or valuable. But Jesus has a different plan. He said, "Let the children alone. Let them come to me. The kingdom of heaven belongs to one such as these." There is no barrier between Jesus and those of the next generation. Jesus isn't putting those rules and regulations. Jesus is not requiring children to be full human beings as society was requiring. The church is not a gathering place for adults only. Children are a part of the assembly, even if we don't always see them here at St. Francis. It's a good to see them once in a while. They're part of the sharing of our community. They're part of the righteous celebration of the Mass. The theme for this year's Children's Sabbath is precious in God's sight, answering the call to cherish and protect every child. While in that call is a reminder that we should love and cherish each other as we love God, that commandment of Jesus is that is the highest and most important commandment of all, We are especially called to remember that those who inherit the kingdom are also those who come after us. Not just our precious future is in the hearts and the minds of those smaller than we are, those most vulnerable and those who are not in a position to care for themselves without our help, but our present as well. Come on in. It is our present as well, a part of our lives, a part of our church, and a part of our society. They are our nieces and our nephews. They are our children and our grandchildren, and in some cases our great-grandchildren. They are also the young ones of the family across the way, and they are the little undocumented ones with their mother waiting in the bus stop so she can go work. And she can leave them with her sister or her other family. They are the teenagers living on the streets of San Francisco or Berkeley or San Jose or anywhere on that underground queer railroad, struggling to make ends meet and vulnerable to exploitation and violence. The kingdom of heaven exists for one such of these, because we are all of us children of God, whether 8 or 18, 48 or 88. And it is by God's grace that we enter God's kingdom, sanctified by God's Spirit. Iniquities burned away by the glorious death and resurrection of God's heavenly child. And with the innocence of children's heart, we are given new life in the core of God's open and loving and eternal heart, deep in the cradle of God's endless and timeless love. Amen.